This is Mythical.
We're so excited to introduce you to Great Jones. Great Jones makes high-quality, thoughtfully designed cookware that's so stunning you won't want to put it away. From Dutch ovens to ceramic dishes to non-stick sheet pans, they've got you covered.
Heck yeah, they do. Their products come in a variety of amazing colors, from classic black and white to pinks, greens, yellows, and blues. And the best part, Nicole, everything's non-toxic.
Josh, I've been in the market for a kettle for months.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about it a weird amount.
Yeah, I've bought like a bunch, returned a bunch, but I just got my hands on the Great Jones Fellow Kettle collab, and I got it in the color broccoli, and I'm so excited to make artisanal teas and coffees. I'm trying to get on my coffee game right now, and I'm so excited to use a gooseneck kettle. We have no idea.
I'm excited to use their yellow hot dish, aka casserole dish. Shout out to Minnesota and Fargo, North Dakota. I'm at that point in my life where I'm like, I'm an adult, I should have nice vessels to serve food out of.
Sure, fair.
Instead of just serving it on like stainless steel restaurant style things. And I like it. It's cute. It's got a good design. Bakes really well. Holds heat. I'm in, baby. And once you try Great Jones, you'll want to share it with friends. They make stunning gifts that are actually useful. Weddings, housewarming parties, birthdays, it's the perfect gift for the foodie in your life.
So upgrade your kitchen and replace those old, rusted hand-me-downs with bold, beautiful, long-lasting pieces from Great Jones. Get started today at greatjones.com and get an extra 15% off your first order with promo code SANDWICH. That's greatjones.com, promo code SANDWICH.
Though its roots are in Italy, pizza is now enjoyed as a comfort food all around the world, but are all the unique combinations of cheesy baked dough created equal? Today we discuss, what's the best regional pizza style?
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What?
Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show where we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
And I'm your host, Nicole Hendizadeh.
And today we have a very special guest with us. Amanda Hester is the co-founder and CEO of Food 52, a community-minded food publication that recently launched its inaugural show of its podcast network, The Genius Recipe Tapes, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. Amanda, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I have more in your bio. Can I continue to gush over more things in your bio?
Sure.
I was supplied with a bio, full disclosure. Me and Nicole do roughly no work on this actual show.
Very little.
And I even edited this down to just the important parts. And holy crap, it is still incredible. Okay, hold on.
Well, I'm old, so that's why. Yeah.
Amanda is also food editor of the New York Times Magazine, the editor of Tea Living, author of the Essential New York Times Cookbook, and she was named one of the 50 most influential women in food by Gourmet Magazine. This is my favorite. Amanda also played herself in the movie Julie and Julia, which is awesome. That is very exciting. One of my favorite movies. I cried
That's
like a baby.
That's so cool, man. What a cool bio to have.
I actually played Julia Child in that movie.
I could see that. Definitely.
Yes.
Yep.
People—they've called me a Meryl Streep type.
Uh-huh.
You know, like yeah. In the sense that I can kind of transform myself into roles.
I can see it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Anyways, Amanda, today we are talking about what the best regional pizza style is. Obviously, a topic that has many different routes it can go. I think we should all just start with our own sort of answers and go from there.
Sure, Amanda, you want to take it away?
You have the floor.
Sure thing. Well, I'm going to start by just talking about the regional pizza that I grew up with, which is called Old Forge White Pizza in Pennsylvania. Old Forge is like a little, like kind of sliver of a neighborhood in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And they are known for making pizza. It's actually, they're kind of like two players and they're really just like kind of bars that made pizza. And they make them on sheet pans. So it's a sheet tray pizza, and you get rectangular pieces, and it's the white pizza is actually dough, and then there's a layer of American cheese, which Josh, yes. I know you'd be a big fan of. And then
is it white American or like the good stuff?
Yes, white. Uh huh. And then it's and I think some people might put provolone, but I'm pretty sure it's just straight up American. And then it's rosemary, dried rosemary. So it's not even fresh rosemary. And like oil and salt. So it has kind of like quasi roots of like kind of Roman pizza bianca, but done very like American style. It's almost like a Chicago version of that. And then there's also a red version, but the white is what people really go to Old Forge for. And, you know, for as long as I can remember, people had to like wait in line to get in.
Oh my God. Who decided the dried rosemary on the white American cheese is my favorite touch.
Yeah,
they're like, you know what would set off this American cheese?
Sending me for a loop. I've never done dried rosemary on pizza before.
I'm into it. And also, I love that, like you said, Old Forge is one neighborhood in Scranton, like a sliver, and that they have developed their own regional pizza style. And that's what I think is so cool about regional pizza styles. They seem to just develop from literally like two restaurants that made it. And then that kind of, you know, becomes known.
Yeah, they were across the street from each other. And yeah, they were like rivals. It was like, you know, rival high schools, rival pizza places. And then no one really, I mean, I didn't know of any other places that made it, but it's like they have, you know, all the business in town.
That's incredible. Nicole, we can jump back and forth, but I'm interested in your answer.
It's very simple. It is grandma pizza. I love the dough. I love the sauce. I love the crispy little edges. I love everything about grandma style pizza.
What is grandma style pizza?
Well, I have a sheet in front of me and I can explain exactly what it is. It is square. I'm going to do it verbatim. Square or rectangular pizza that has been cooked in an olive oil coated pan. It is covered in a thin layer of mozzarella cheese and in an uncooked canned or fresh tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
Founded in New York, specifically Long Island, thick crust and crispy. Oftentimes, the cheese goes directly onto the dough and the sauce on top.
Okay, I know what you're talking about, because I've had it at, do you know Pizzeria Suprema, I think Pizza Suprema, which is right near Madison Square Garden in New York City. And it's sort of known for its like classic New York style pizza, but they do a grandma pizza that's really good.
I just love the way the cheese kind of creeps up on the top and gets all crispy and delicious, and then you fold it over on the super soft goopy cheese.
Oh.
And it reminds me a lot of Pizza Hut pizza in that it's like a cakey, super soft, pillowy dough, and then it's this beautiful, like, clean sauce, and then the cheese. And then I don't typically get toppings on it. Mm-hmm. I just do dough, sauce, cheese, and a little bit of Parmesan, and a little bit of chili flake, and I'm good for, like, the rest of the week.
We have a combined two total trips to New York, you and I.
I've never been to New York.
Yes, I have been to New York City twice. So, like, we are both coming at this from a very disadvantaged angle that we both grew up in California, which I think a lot of people would say, like, does not have a distinct pizza culture, except for the fact that California-style pizza is my answer for the best regional pizza style.
So, what's the story behind, and I've never been to one, but I just know of it, California Pizza Kitchen.
Oh, my.
CPK is our church. It's where we pray to the barbecue chicken pizza gods. You can
Inshallah.
Take the rest
so,
of it.
Yeah, so CPK, which now I believe is, it's actually very sad. CPK is bankrupt.
It is.
And they actually went to auction and they had no interested buyers. So CPK is likely on its way out. Amanda, I don't know, you know, Food 52's greater aspirations, but if y'all want to buy the California Pizza Kitchen, I think you can get it as a distressed asset for pennies on the dollar. So this is my official pitch to you for that. The people at Mythical, they sure were not into that idea. I wrote a whole pitch deck. But no, California Pizza Kitchen has a very incredible story behind it. The person who created their original menu, his name was Ed Ledoux, and he was actually handpicked by Wolfgang Puck to start the pizza program at Spago. Ooh. He was working at a restaurant in the Bay Area called Prego, and a lot of people sort of trace the modern, you know, fancy topping pizzas to Alice Waters at Chez Panisse, because they had a wood-burning pizza oven. They put, you know, figs and mostarda and all that on it. And so this dude, Ed Ledoux, was plucked by Wolfgang Puck. He went to Spago. Spago did the famous Peking duck pizza with the hoisin, which is still on the menu. And they have the smoked salmon pizza.
Oh,
and he
sure.
also created a barbecue chicken pizza there. So two investors looking to start a restaurant stole Ed Ledoux. He was only 27 years old at the time, stole him from Spago, and they launched California Pizza Kitchen with this idea that you can put like crazy wacky toppings on pizza. But for me, it's that movement of like breaking down what makes a pizza to then build it back up again into a product that's greater than the sum of its parts is what makes California style the best, because I don't think there would be a Nancy Silverton and Moza without the hard work put in by California Pizza Kitchen.
Wow. I didn't know in asking that question that I was going to get such like a thorough history.
Yeah, that's off the dome, Amanda.
I thought that Chez Panisse was known more for like the grilled pizza, kind of grilling it over, you know, wood fire. And that was sort of the whole kind of like romance of California cooking.
I think there were. I think California Pizza Kitchen, or like Ed Ledoux specifically, took this sort of, you know, idea of that like rustic wood-fired thing, and they almost like pop-culturified it to like, oh, people seem to like this different thing being done in California with pizza. We are going to sell it to the masses by shoving barbecue chicken on it. Because like, I mean, Chez Panisse, obviously, I mean, the dish that I best know them for is figs on a plate. Which I think there was a critic that
knocked him for that, and I can't remember who it was. But anyways, I mean, they were all about, you know, very much the simplicity of cooking, despite instituting, I think, the bones of the fusion food movement with California cuisine and, like, all the great chefs that came from there. I mean, David Leibovitz, Jonathan Waxman, all these people. But yeah, to me, like, there would be no CPK without Chez Panisse, and there would be no Nancy Silverton and Moza without CPK. Ergo, CPK is the best style.
But it sounds like there is soon to be no CPK. So, like, if you were to revive it, what would you do? Well, how would you fix it and bring it back to life and make it thrive?
I think sometimes the phoenix needs to stay buried in the ashes. I don't think CPK necessarily needs to come back because other people have taken up the mantle. And literally right before we started recording this, Nicole goes, you're gonna bring up neo-Neapolitan pizza, aren't you? And I was like, yeah, dang right I am. So right now, there is a really cool movement, especially from L.A. Pizzaiolos,
yeah.
Thinking of Daniele Uditi at Pizzana, which has caused a lot of waves, who they're taking very legitimate sort of Neapolitan techniques. I think he's like a fourth-generation pizzaiolo, and he's taking that, and he's, you know, creating pies with, you know, Mexican chorizo and cilantro crema. You have guys like Zach Pollock at Cosa Buona who are doing, you know, smoked pineapple on their pizzas that are made with, you know, a 72-hour dough and whatnot. So I think you have a lot of people who have taken up the spirit of California-style pizza that has sort of just broken down all these rules of simplicity and purity, because Neapolitan pizza is something that, you know, there's literally a whole guidebook on what it needs to be to be considered Neapolitan. The crust can't be more than 3.5 centimeters tall and all that. And so California took the best elements of that and then broke all the rules and said, screw you, here's a smoked pineapple pizza. And I love them for that.
Yeah, CPK has a frozen line, Amanda. So you can also just get the frozen one.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to run right out for that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm out in the Hamptons, and at some like kind of fancy store, there were t-shirts that said pineapple on pizza person.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, no, that's not me. That's never been me. Are you a pineapple on pizza person?
That was our first podcast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we were so young.
As if pineapple belongs on pizza. And we both were a resounding yes.
Well, we both grew up, again, growing up, it's such a regional thing because we didn't grow up with, you know, what I'd call like a pizza culture. You know, for us, pizza is you go to Costco, you get a 700 calorie slice of floppy wet cheese.
Yep.
And that's pizza to us. So we didn't have these like, you know, Brooklyn pizzerias at our disposal. We had CPK.
Yeah.
And so we didn't, you know, grow up with any of these sort of rules. So for us, it was like pineapple on pizza, you know, why not? I think you have to come at it from an angle first of why not as opposed to why.
Yeah, agreed. I love pineapple on pizza.
And there's tons of different regionalities that put, you know, weird. You go to Sweden, there's actually a Persian-Armenian-Swedish pizzeria in Glendale. God bless the greater Los Angeles area. And the dude makes a pizza that is very common in Sweden that has banana and shrimp on it.
And curry.
And curry powder,
yeah,
that's right.
Banana, shrimp, and curry powder, yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay.
And does it? Do I personally enjoy it?
No.
It's kind of gross if you break it down. But it's one of those things that, you know, based on where you grew up, it's just, if there's no initial rules coming into it saying you shouldn't do this, then you kind of just do it. And people, you know, enjoy those flavors. It gets propagated and passed on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the coolest things about pizza.
Wait, so what would you not ever put on a pizza?
Kiwis.
Kiwis. That's a big thing.
Kiwis.
That was very specific.
Yeah.
Why a kiwi?
We both went to kiwi.
Kiwi, mango. I think any sort of tropical fruit other than pineapple.
But what makes pineapple special in that?
I don't know. I think it's because I was conditioned that way. So just so you know, Amanda, I kept kosher in my household for a long time. So my pizzas were typically pineapple, onion, jalapeno. Mm. So those are my fun toppings. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm just conditioned to enjoy pineapple on pizza. But mango on pizza makes my head hurt. The idea of that just seems wrong. Kiwi seems wrong. Papaya seems wrong. Certain fruits cannot be on pizza.
I mean, it's funny having that strong of a reaction to that. I lived with two Italian roommates in college, and their strongest revulsion to anything on pizza was chicken.
What?
Which to me makes a little bit of sense. They were also incredibly anti-chicken on pasta. Huh. Because they were just like, you have the pasta, that's separate. You have the pizza, that's separate. Then you have your meat course. You have your secondi. Your
right, but they,
you know?
Put,
and so for
they
them,
put other kinds of meat on pasta.
But I think they're like, you know, kind of accent meats. Something that's like heavily flavored, like a guanciale is,
speck.
You know, different. Yeah, speck. Like those things are adding, you know, different kind of character and flavor to a pizza. But chicken, you know, which should be like a main protein. They were, I cannot tell you how confused
they
were.
I'm with them. Like, I don't want chicken on my pizza or my pasta, but at the same time, I can't really explain why. Again, it's like conditioning. Maybe it's just because it never was. And so therefore I feel like it never should be. And actually my sister, one of my sisters became an exchange student in Germany, and her host family, to try to make her feel welcome, they decided, they were like, let's serve her pizza when she arrives. And they served her pizza with pineapple on it. And she like immediately called home and was like, I want to come home.
No.
I wonder where they got that idea.
I don't know. Maybe CPK.
It could have been. But I mean, the pineapple and pizza thing, it was started in Canada, but then it gradually moved to Australia, where it was literally for a long time the number one pizza topping in all of Australia.
Huh.
Which to me is wild. So like literally supplanting more than pepperoni, which also most people from Italy seem to have a strong revulsion against, like American style pepperoni.
I don't love pepperoni. Now I do. Now I just like the little cups. You know, the little cups that curl? When the cups curl, I know I'm having a good time with my pepperoni pizza. Yeah.
Is it a Prince Street?
I don't know.
Prince Street? What?
Is that the New York pizza? Prince Street pizza? Is that the spot in, it's like deep Brooklyn.
Oh, no, I don't think so. DeFara's?
DeFara's is what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Where they do the little,
you've never,
you have to go out there, you have to get all the way out there, you don't know if you're going to get in.
It's like a club.
Yeah.
Like a club in LA.
when the pizzaiolo from Lucali in Brooklyn
That was great.
Came out to LA to do a pop-up, I mean, we stood like in line in the rain to get there before my publicist girlfriend, who I love very much, snuck us through the line and got us in. But, I mean, yeah, that's like kind of part of the experience sometimes.
God, that was really good pizza.
God, that was really good. Brooklyn's, I mean, I have nothing but respect for, despite all my pedantic rantings about California style pizza, like the, you know, Brooklyn, New York thin crust, big floppy slice. It's very sturdy on the bottom. To me, it's kind of the like platonic ideal of what a slice of pizza should be. But maybe I'm romanticizing that because I've grown up in California my whole life, and I've like, you know, never had that sort of endemic experience in New York. Mm-hmm.
The closest thing I got to that was Mulberry's Pizza.
Mm.
Mulberry's Pizza? What's that?
Oh, it's like New York style pizza in like the streets of Beverly Hills.
Oh, really? Oh, that's hilarious.
If you ever come here, just try it and then tell me how you feel about it, because that's the only experience I've had with New York style pizza.
Yeah.
Because I've never gone.
Because I've never been able to get a reservation. But what do you make? What do you make of it?
Of mozza?
Yeah.
So mozza for me might be pound for pound the best pizza in LA.
Really?
I've probably said like 9 different restaurants when people ask me what the best pizza in LA is. But I think if I really think long, deep and hard about it, I think mozza is the best pizza in Los Angeles. I think what Nancy Silverton did with that dough recipe is like some form of alchemy.
Interesting.
It is so sturdy, and so it has this delightful, just glutinous pull and chew to it, but it's so incredibly thin. Hmm. But it's not like a good Neapolitan pizza, right? Apparently you're supposed to like eat from the inside out, and it's a little wet on the bottom, and that's like kind of part of it. But this takes all that beauty of that thin crust, super high heat Neapolitan pizza, and just makes it like sturdier. Mm. And apparently, if I've read some interviews of her talking about her dough recipe, and she was like, I just broke all the rules that Italians said not to do. Like, I, you know, put milk in it. I used, you know, an incredibly hard flour and all this stuff. And so she, you know, kind of, I think she God, maybe even like tried yogurt in the original dough recipe.
That makes sense
to me. Add to the protein structure of it, all that.
That makes a lot of sense to put yogurt in pizza dough.
Yeah,
actually.
And then, I mean, also, you know, she has this great relationships with so many local farms in LA, and so she gets all the best produce. So, you know, they have their the squash blossom pizza.
Uh-huh.
It's a really big one.
I had that.
Yeah.
I didn't like it when I went.
You
it was,
didn't
can
like
I tell
it?
You why? It
Please.
Was too salty. And it was too oily. I love oily pizzas. I do not put the napkin on the pizza to take off the extra oil.
No.
It was so oily and salty. I was like,
was it the dough that was salty?
It the way I was supposed to? No, it wasn't the dough. It was everything on top of it. It was like super. It was like maybe 5 years ago, to be honest. It's been a while. I should give it another shot. Nancy, I'm going to come by and give it another shot. But to be honest, my favorite pizza, it actually closed. It was called Soto. It was my favorite pizza in the whole entire world. It was gorgeous. It had this black leoparding around the crust. The sauce was perfectly tangy and just like the most beautiful dollops of cheese on it. And I thought that was my favorite pizza by far was Soto.
That's Neapolitan. So the oven at Soto actually reached over 1,000 degrees.
Oh, my God.
Was a big thing.
Wow.
Yeah, which, again, most people would say that's too hot. But again, Cali Pizza coming in, CPK, opening up that rule book. Dude is cooking pizzas at 1,000 degrees for literally like 45 seconds and pulling them out.
Good.
And it was so incredible. And now he's doing like Brooklyn-style thin crust pizza with super fina.
Yes.
Which is pretty solid. They do the cut pepperoni.
Yes, that was very good pizza.
That was very good pizza.
Wait, who was doing that?
It's the chef from Soto. His name is Steve Sampson.
Oh, okay.
He kind of took this Neapolitan dough recipe that he used to just, you know, make these personal style pies at 1,000 degrees. And he basically took that same dough, and now he's doing like big old floppy New York takeout pizza. And it's really incredible. It's a really great hybrid of styles.
Wait, what's that place called?
Superfina. I have a whole list of recs for when you get out to LA.
All right. I look forward to that in 2024.
Yeah. So living in New York, I mean, do you have like a lot of opinions about pizza from your New York experience, or is your heart still in the Scranton white pie?
Oh, no. I'm pretty like, I like all pizza. I'm pretty happy whenever there's pizza in front of me. For a long time, so we live in Brooklyn Heights, and for a long time when we first moved there, we used to go at least once a week to Grimaldi's. And it became so touristy, like we just couldn't get in anymore. And so, and then they had some like, they were like sold or and had some lawsuit. And so now we just don't go anymore at all. But that was like a great, classic, like New York style pizza. Yeah, we go to Roberta's now and then. I mean, we sort of like, you know, we're sort of pizza nomads. But I don't do the places where I have to go and like wait outside in line. It just feels like, I don't know, kind of takes away from the joy of like pizza to me feels like it should be easy. Like, not something you have to like work super hard for. But so I did, when I worked in Italy, at a bakery called, Forno Campo dei Fiori in Rome. And they actually were known for their meter pizza. Do you know the meter pizza?
Is that the pizza al taglio with the scissors?
Yeah. So it's like, you cut it with the scissors, but it's like literally like, it's about probably like 8 to 10, about eight, I'd say, like 8 inches wide and then a meter long. And we bake that, I mean, it's baked in the bread oven. So the idea is that you get these like kind of like long slabs that can go deep into the oven and then be pulled out easily and then snipped. And people would wait in line for that, but the line moved quickly because we were just like getting it to go. And it was like a pizza. They had two kinds. They had pizza rosso and then pizza bianca, but it was not the white, old forge white pizza. It was like pizza bianca was literally just like kind of oil and salt. And then the rosso, which was really good, was just, crushed tomatoes with a little salt, and oil, and that would just basically kind of be brushed on the top. But I was thinking about it when you were talking about that, Nancy saying that she's breaks all the rules of dough making, because I noticed that sometimes when they were making the dough, they would, if they had extra egg whites left over from, you know, making like pastries and other things, they would just toss them into the dough. And I don't know
really
what effect it had, but I was always sort of intrigued because that seemed like an unconventional detail.
That's really interesting. I do think there is some degree that as Americans, I mean, who grew up with repping American cheese on pizza, repping pineapple on pizza, barbecue chicken pizza, I think we do tend to kind of fetishize this idea of simplicity in other cultures. You know, like we read an article on, you know, some website that goes like, in Naples, they never do X to their dough. And we kind of take that as truth.
Yeah.
And then when you're actually there, they're just like, No, yeah, we got extra egg whites. You throw them in the dough, whatever. You know?
Well, I think that's true, but I also feel like... But they have the discipline to, like not throw dried rosemary on top of their white pizza. You know what I mean? Like, like they just, like, they know how to keep it simple. I also think, like, the flour there and the water there is different. And so you get this, like, the doughs there just are so much more supple than American doughs. And maybe Nancy, like, uses, you know, imported flour or something, or, like, a lower gluten flour. But, yeah, I just think that, like, the crusts in Italy are just, it's hard to compete with what they, you know, I guess what they're able to kind of produce in the local environment.
Yeah. And then even when you're importing those ingredients, you know, to the States or whatever, you know, the flour is literally like kind of dying. Like they're not cooking with live flour is a term I've used a lot. I've heard a lot of pizzaiolos use. And ditto with the cheese and everything. We actually went to a local mozzarella producer in California, out in the kind of Inland Empire in farm country. And he was talking about these Italian pizzerias in LA and how they want to import everything from Italy, even though I'm Italian. I have been making cheese for 35 years. My sons, my beautiful Italian volleyball playing sons, they all make cheese too. My cows are less than a mile from where the milk gets siphoned off into the tank and gets put in the cheese into the factory to make the mozzarella. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, what they're doing in Italy, it's nothing different. And you're worsening the product by importing it. You know, he's like, this, the whole key to why all the Italian ingredients are so good is because everything is locally farmed and processed right there. And so it was this kind of, you know, cool moment where he was like, I am Italy. Like, it's the knowledge that you're seeking. What was his name?
I didn't go with you.
Really
I'm
great
sorry.
Mozzarella. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I didn't go with you. I can't.
Yeah, and he was talking about a pizza restaurant in LA that tried his mozzarella on their pizza and said, like, this is much better than the stuff that's imported, but we're going to import it because then we can say all ingredients imported from Italy. And it was this kind of like really, like, I don't know, kind of a shameful
whack.
Metaphor in a way. It was whack.
It was whack.
It was whack. That's whack.
Just, yeah. That's unfair. Yeah.
This kind of adherence to old standards. It's like, are you making the best product possible or are you doing this because you think people will pay a premium?
People will pay a premium. People like foreign.
They like foreign.
They like foreign things around here.
We got to go to Italy, though.
I've been to Italy.
Amanda, you've been to Italy?
Yeah.
You've never been to New York, but you've been to Italy.
Yeah.
What? When?
Like 4 years ago before I met you. It was really fun.
Fine. Amanda, we're banking on you taking us on a field trip to Scranton and Italy, the two cultural capitals.
Also, I want to start with Scranton and have Italy be the kicker.
That's probably a good idea. I do love the like kind of influences of Americanized products, especially processed. We were on an Instagram Live recently. You know how much I love processed food and I'm fascinated by it. But the Old Forge pizza reminds me of like St. Louis style pizza.
Oh my gosh.
Which I think we've talked about the best regional pizzas. I think St. Louis style is the worst regional pizza. And again, I've picked fights with too many cities. St. Louis is fine. They got their spare ribs. They're chilling. They have toasted ravioli. I love me a toasted ravioli. But St. Louis style pizza is actually on unleavened crust.
Oh,
it's like a cracker.
Which
it's like matzo pizza.
Which to the chosen people like us, we call that matzo. And we grew up eating matzo pizzas on Passover.
Yeah.
And so in St. Louis, they do not leaven their crust and they just put processed cheese called Provel, which is kind of like a white American on it. And so to me, I don't know what the best is. We got a couple answers in the chat right now. But the worst, for my money, is St. Louis.
It almost seems like they're trying to make it bad.
Yeah, I think that's just the St. Louis aesthetic.
You're a bully. You're a bully.
St. Louis is fine. All right, official closing remarks after we just ruined St. Louis. Everyone from St. Louis, please go give us 1 star on iTunes. Actually, don't. The 5 stars really help. Don't do that. It hurts me and Nicole's feelings. But final answers. I'm sticking by California as the best. Has anyone changed their mind?
I'm not changing my mind. Sorry.
Grammy
not
pizza.
Happening.
Amanda, your heart?
Well, I feel like I haven't really experienced the California pizza enough. I'm happy with my New York pizza. You know, I think we're all clinging to our regions.
Come out to LA. We're going to give you a Burbank-style pizza. It's
No. Just buy
Cheetos.
The frozen stuff. Just buy the frozen
it's gonna
stuff.
It's going to have hot Cheetos and pineapple on it. You're going to love it.
Oh, okay. Great. Awesome.
All right, Nicole and Amanda, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling around there in the Twitterverse. It's time for a segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
Like that
we
one.
Get how do we get worse at saying that in unison?
I'm better.
Week over week. Well, no, if you're better and I'm worse, then we are
I have a very
worse.
Melodic voice.
All right, Nicole, you kick it off.
Okay. YVEL_1 says soup is not a meal. I do not agree with that. Soup is definitely a meal. Have you ever had French onion soup or clam chowder? That's a meal.
Big old bowl of pho. That's going to leave you feeling like it was a meal.
Big old bowl of pho.
Yeah.
How do you feel about soup as a meal, Amanda?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know. Okay, so I need to weigh in too. I was sort of like, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah,
I'm always like hungry after I have soup. But when I thought about like pho or something like that, yeah, mm-hmm. soup can definitely be a meal. You just have to be soup. Eating the right soups.
Correct.
Soup You're means correct. Many things. I think I don't believe soup exists. I don't believe soup exists. I think the definition of soup is too broad.
What?
That soup. Have you ever heard like a biological taxonomist talk about how fish don't exist?
No.
What do you mean?
What are you talking
about
right now?
The term fish is too broad to actually be descriptive of any actual category of animal. Therefore, it means nothing. Same as soup. Because the difference between a little shooter of gazpacho at a wedding, that's a soup, and a giant honkin' bowl of ramen, that's too broad. Soup doesn't exist. That's my answer. All right. At @jade_iemrg, bubbly is superior to LaCroix in that the flavor is stronger. No. Seltzers taste the same.
Spindrift.
It's all a scam, except for Spindrift, which has actual fruit juice in it that I enjoy.
I'm with you. Yeah, but I can't really speak with authority since I've only had LaCroix and not the other one. But I've had lots of Spindrift. It definitely stands out. All the other ones taste sort of fake.
It's weird. They do, but apparently, yeah, the LaCroix key lime.
I'm drinking the key lime. It literally tastes like vanilla pie.
It's like you fell into a pie factory.
It's very odd. I'm still going to drink it, though.
But they use the term naturally essenced on LaCroix, right?
Yeah. What does that mean? Also, whenever you see the word natural on an ingredients list, it's mm-hmm. like a signal that like it's definitely far from natural.
Yes. Yeah, there's a big movement to try and ban the word natural from mm-hmm. food packaging.
Yeah.
Because 70% of respondents said they associated the word natural with healthier. And there's just no legal requirement to use the term natural. Although, Skippy natural peanut butter, Yuma boy, I love it.
Foster the Peyton says, Popeyes is greater than Raisin Cane's, no question. Have you had Raisin Cane's before?
No.
It's like, is it regional in LA?
Yeah, so it's, well, it's, I think it's a Midwest regional. Mm-hmm. Their whole thing is fried chicken tenders. So literally all they have are like chicken tenders, fries, and like cane sauce.
Bread.
And bread, yeah, Texas toast.
Yeah, it's a very beige plate.
They only sell brown food.
Yeah,
literally,
very beige.
They'll give you like a cup of like the most wilted wet coleslaw that's heating from the fries that's sitting on. Otherwise, it's all brown.
I prefer Popeyes to Cane's all day, every day.
Raising Cane's to me is the most overrated regional fast food restaurant. It pains me to say that. I like Zaxby's is great. Whataburger's perfectly fine. I love me some Taco John's, all this stuff. But Raising Cane's, to me, their cane sauce has a ton of celery seed in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot stand the taste of celery seed, celery root, any of that. And so that's on me.
I've stopped putting celery in mirepoix.
Yes.
You have? You and Josh are the same. I love celery in my mirepoix.
Yeah, it's just like, it's kind of like bitter, and I don't know, it just doesn't, it's like metallic. Mm-hmm. I feel like it doesn't add anything positive. What do you think it does?
Agreed.
I don't know. It just feels wrong. It feels wrong to not put celery in my mirepoix.
Break the rules. Be the CPK of the stew world.
Like sometimes, you know, I'll do a little sofrito and put the green pepper in. But like, no, I need the celery. I need that like weird metallic bitterness throughout my food.
I was making... I need the gross. Give me the bad taste.
A little bit of bad taste makes the good taste gooder.
Why have we talked about the idea of putting poo smell in perfume so much lately?
Dude, exactly.
Ambergris
is whale vomit. Yeah, whale vomit makes the other things smell more delightful. So celery makes the other foods taste better.
I guess that is like the argument of like drinking a Negroni before a meal. It's like this tastes so bad,
what?
You need to get the taste out of your mouth.
I love Negronis.
We both love Negronis.
Okay. I was gonna say it's my favorite. It's like my favorite drink. Yeah.
Yeah, it's our favorite too.
We once had a like a cocktail happy hour out in the parking lot with the whole company, and they hired bartenders to come in, and Nicole and I for some reason had all
like
the ingredients
really
to make a Negroni.
For you guys. They're like, we're gonna throw you a party in the parking lot.
Oh, they got a bounce house.
They got a bounce house, Amanda.
This is a nice party. Parking lot in Burbank got the best parking lots in all of the Northeast San Fernando Valley. Trust me. But we made Negronis in 16-ounce deli cups.
Yeah.
And just nursed a giant Negroni the whole day, and it was a lovely day.
I took a nap in the bounce house.
You took a nap?
I did. I was in there for like 20 minutes. No one noticed. Okay.
You took a nap in the bounce house?
I did. It was really good.
Oh, I didn't know that. Where are we at? All right, we got at Jade, I-E-M-R-G, grilled cheese dipped in homemade applesauce is so good. Yeah, it's like a dirtbag cheese plate. You know, you get like the, what's the quince jam?
A membrillo.
You get the membrillo, you get the manchego, that little rustic farm bread. This is just that. This is the old Ford style pizza of an Italian cheese plate or a Spanish cheese plate. And I'm into it.
Me and Amanda are shaking our heads like, no, bro.
You spend all the time like crisping the grilled cheese to get like the perfect crispiness. And then you just make it soggy with apples. Was it applesauce?
Yes,
homemade applesauce.
Correct. Homemade, though.
They
homemade.
Specify.
I'm not opposed to eating those two things at the same meal, but like, you know, you got to have like the separator on the plate.
Mm. Well, do you dip? Because I've never understood tomato soup and grilled cheese.
No,
I don't enjoy
do that
very much.
Mm. I dip ketchup.
I have my grilled cheese and then have my tomato soup. But
yeah,
like otherwise you ruin like much of the pleasure of the grilled cheese. It's not that the flavors don't go nicely together, but it's like you want that crispy crunch.
We've talked a lot about my favorite texture in all of food is something crispy that has been ruined with something soggy, like the crust on a chicken parmesan, for example. Like when I make chicken parm, I do like to leave like 30% of the edges uncovered in sauce, so you do get some of that crispy. But I love like a fried thing soaked in a wet thing. That's my favorite. Like actually, regional pizza styles, pizza montanara from Naples. Mm-hmm. It's a fried pizza dough, then slather in sauce and cheese. Oh. So they cook it like wet, you know, like Neapolitan wet.
Yeah,
and
you
got
the
fresh mozz. Uh-huh. So it's like fried but wet.
Ugh.
Fried but wet. That's my favorite texture.
That sounds so appealing.
You watch me dip a Cheeto fried jalapeno popper into a caramelized cream egg yolk. So should not be surprising.
Amana Navid says eggs are amazing and versatile. This is a good opinion.
Not controversial, great.
No, not controversial.
Eggs are the best food.
Not a bad opinion. Eggs are my favorite thing to eat all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I eat eggs all the time.
Yeah.
All right. At Photo Mojo, measuring cups and measuring spoons can both measure wet and dry things. I defer to Amanda.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to put this one on you because I use them for both. But maybe they're... I don't know.
We're all exposed as frauds right now.
Yeah, sure.
I don't actually I think it's 8 ounces of volume.
I think that where would this not work?
A
right?
pint and a pound is the same world around.
That makes it actually no, a pint in Australia is literally 20 ounces.
Well, there you go.
Did you know that?
I do
know. If you get a pint of beer in Australia, it is not 16 ounces, it's a 20 ounce beer.
Whoa.
I thought you said a boat because I thought a boat was a unit of beer in Australia, because if you look up Australian beer units, there's like 15 of them and they all mean something different. It's like, oh, you want a mini schooner? And it's like, I just like a cup of beer, please.
Oh my gosh.
So I'd use any measuring cup to measure anything, I suppose. The biggest issue in measuring anything is we have gone through this recently with Trevor, who you met yesterday, a budding stand-up comedian. He will measure flour for a recipe and test it, and then I'll do it on camera measuring the flour, and it always ends up different. And I'm like, Trevor, how do you measure your flour? Are you, like, packing and scraping? Are you, you know, like, sifting and then scooping? And he just goes, like, I don't know. I measure it how I measure it. And I'm like, well, I need to watch how you do it then, because our things have been turning out differently.
Well, yeah. Everyone says you're supposed to dip and sweep, but I actually don't think – that does work well. I always whisk my flour and then I take a spoon and drop it into a measuring cup and then scrape it off, which yes, one could argue is highly tedious. And it is, but I think that you have better baked goods.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously you should weigh your dry ingredients, but I don't really do that.
Yeah.
So many recipes don't give weight.
I want to.
Yeah, you do. All your recipes come in with grams on them. Like, who's Nicole trying to impress?
Okay, Gristle McThornbody. Wow, says, yeah, that's a name. Pickled carrots are better than pickled cucumbers. That's not true at all.
Mm.
No way. No way.
Pickled green beans are the king.
I feel like these are two different. It's like two different species, right? It's like carrots are a pickled carrot has like you value for it's like the sweet. The sweet tangy, and then with a cucumber, it's like more about the like refreshing tangy. So like, I don't think you can compare them.
Yeah, what is the functionality of your pickles, sir or madam? I don't Gristle McThornbody. Oh, they're Irish McThornbody.
Yes.
Yeah, it all depends what like the function of your pickles. It's like my like favorite pickle maybe is, I mean, the Vietnamese pickle that we're familiar with on banh mi, like do chua, which is, you know, the daikon and the carrot.
Yeah.
But the carrots, you got to rub them with the salt to get like really break them down. Mm-hmm. Ugh, that's my favorite pickle. But yeah, again, pickles have different utilities. All right, at alina.lin, sandwiches are just deconstructed salads in between bread. I will say, I am fascinated by the idea that you could have a salad and a sandwich that contain the same macronutrients,
mm-hmm.
carbs, fats, proteins, the same amount of bread and meat and vegetables, yet one is a salad and one is a sandwich. As in, if you took a, you know, a tuna salad sandwich and you chopped it up and you toasted the bread into croutons and then you put it on a plate, that is suddenly a salad and not a sandwich. I am fascinated by the salad sandwich paradox.
This is some big brain stuff. This person definitely went to college. This is crazy. Blowing my mind.
I mean, I think it might work for some sandwiches, but I'm thinking, like, what about the ham and butter sandwich?
That's a salad.
Who makes a ham and butter salad?
No, the butter is the dressing. The ham is your protein. And bread, technically, I'd argue, comes from wheat, which is a vegetable.
Oh, get out of here.
No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I do think, and especially when people are, I mean, you know, growing up in Orange County, so many times you heard the phrase, I'm being healthy, I'm ordering a salad.
Yeah.
And then I love looking at like the TGI Fridays salad calorie counts and like, you know, the fried chicken buttermilk salads, like 1900 calories.
Fried chicken buttermilk. Those are all words.
I call them naughty salads.
Okay, this is our last opinion. Marshmallow Dan says chocolate cake is better when you shake pepper on it cuts Ooh. Through the richness. Now, do you think they're saying black pepper or chili pepper? Because I used to work at a chocolate store and we had this amazing chocolate bar that had guajillo and pasilla chilies ground into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would make a cake with that chocolate bar shaved over the top. And boy, oh boy, was that a delicious experience. So I do agree that like putting like a dash of pepper or like a dash of like cinnamon in a chocolate cake can definitely cut through the richness. But only if it's those two. Black pepper.
No. I dig peppercorn. I said some really great like pink peppercorn, especially pink peppercorn and white chocolate. For
yeah,
me.
Of course. I've done
really
that
really gorgeous. But even any peppercorn or chili pepper go really well with it. I even like a little bit of like horseradish. And I had a really great dessert at Providence. Don't know if you've heard of it. 2 Michelin stars. No, but the pastry chef did a really cool dish that was mustard flour and honey panna cotta. And had that slight horseradishiness to cut through. Mwah.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pass on the pepper.
No one's forcing you. No one's forcing your hand at the pepper. And on that note, thank you for listening to A Hot Dog's a Sandwich. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us. Where can we hear more of your food opinions? And please plug away on the new podcast network or anything you want.
Oh, great. Yeah. Please subscribe and download the Genius Recipe Tapes, which is our newest podcast. And and please come check out food52.com. We're also at food52 on Instagram, TikTok, all the socials. And come hang with us.
We'll do that. I am a huge unabashed fan of food52. I have been reading it for years. And so honestly, this is a huge pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been great hanging out with you.
Likewise. And if you want to hear more from us here in the Mythical Kitchen, we've got new episodes for you every Wednesday.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, you can hit us up on Twitter at @MythicalChef or @NHendizadeh with the hashtag #OpinionCasserole.
For more Mythical Kitchen, check us out on YouTube. We launch new videos every week.
And of course, if you want to share pictures of your dishes, hit us up on Instagram at @MythicalKitchen.
We'll see you next time. Amanda, I'll see you next time. You're coming back, right?
Yeah, come next week.
Yeah.
Come back.
All right, anytime.
Come hang out.